You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
It's cranking up, and it is a spring football league that is has been much needed. We had the XFL and USFL last year. Now we have merged, and the UFL is here. First games are coming up this weekend. It is a true minor league for the National Football League, and one of the outstanding coordinators and quarterback coaches for the last 15 years in the NFL is a head coach for the Memphis Showboats. He's part of that Youngstown football mafia, and that is John DeFilippo, who joins us right now here on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM Channel 80, as we are presented in part by Progressive Insurance. And Coach DeFilippo, it's good to talk to you again, man. Before we even get into UFL and your expectations and everything else, I mentioned that Youngstown football mafia, the Stoops brothers. Jim Tressel, we can go on down the list. What is it about that small town in Ohio that has developed so many remarkable football coaches?
Yeah, there's a lot of us. And that, I'll tell you what, one of the proudest moments of my career is I got sent a link from one of my buddies. And he goes, hey, you've officially made it. It's like kind of jokingly. And if you go on the football coaches in the Wikipedia page from Youngstown, Ohio, and I'm on there. I made it. You know, so, I mean, there's some big-time names on there. So, you know, I'd won a Super been fortunate to be a coach for 10 or 12 years and won a Super Bowl. And by then, my buddies finally said I made it because I made the football coach Youngstown, Ohio page.
Well, you've certainly been in the game for a very long time, as Ian mentioned, not just as a head coach now in the UFL, but as a longtime NFL assistant. So I had to ask you, because we got the news today, Coach, that the most significant rule change, one of them, that we've seen, frankly, in NFL history, but certainly in modern here NFL history, is going to go into effect this upcoming season for the NFL, where they're stealing what was the XFL model on kickoffs. So what's your opinion, as somebody who spent a lot of years there coaching in the NFL, on a change there to the model for kickoffs?
Yeah, I'm a purist at heart. I get really excited when there's a really good kickoff return. I think a lot of times that can sway the game. You can pin the defense back, you know, and get them backed up, or you get a great return, you get a short field. I mean, that's a huge, huge play in that football game. You know, obviously, we're all for player safety. Every single coach, every single player, every single fan should be for player safety. But at the end of the day, the numbers are what they are in terms of the injuries. But I'm a little bit of a purist, and I'll miss the return.
You know, Coach, they went with the XFL model. And I know this was a big topic of conversation in the merger between USFL and XFL and coming into the UFL, where Darryl Moose Johnston, you know, obviously three-time Super Bowl champion, you know, and a longtime Dallas Cowboy on the USFL side, was adamant about using your kickoff. And then Dean Blandino, Russ Brandon, and the XFL side really love their model, and that's the one that was adopted by the NFL. But the injuries and the return rate are very similar. But the optics for the USFL and now UFL, where you are more traditional football. So when you've seen both and you watched both and you've been a part of one side, how do you view it when it comes to the numbers and everything else and the optics of the new return?
Well, it's traditional return, but we kick off from the 20. So we're encouraging returns in our game. I want to say we were upwards of 90, 92% kickoff returns last year.
As 94.
An offensive coach, I love it because you should get the ball around the 35-yard line. And so it's just what we've adopted. And, you know, whichever way they're going to go now or in the future really is not up to me. You know, my job is to find whichever way, you know, we decided to take the USFL model in the UFL is find a way to coach it better. Those are the rules. A lot of people that have spent a lot of time researching on what rules to do. And it's our job as coaches to find a way to coach it better, no matter what the rule is.
Coach John DeFilippo, UFL's Memphis Showboats head coach, longtime NFL assistant, joining us here on Amber and Ian. Coach, before we get to the Memphis Showboats, which we are going to get to in just a moment, I got to ask you, because you were with Justin Fields in Chicago as a quarterback's coach when he was a rook. And obviously Justin Fields, for me and Ian and for everybody here at ESPN, has been a huge topic of conversation this offseason with what was Chicago going to do and obviously the ultimate him getting traded away. What are your thoughts on Justin Fields and his future in the NFL?
Yeah, I think he has a bright future. It's a blip in his radar screen, which I think is going to be a very small blip for a short amount of time. We saw a bunch of, I don't know the exact number, the fact the quarterbacks and I were talking about it yesterday in the room, the amount of guys that you know, started games this year. So I hope Russell Wilson, you know, whoever they decide to start, you know, plays every snap, but the other guy is going to be used at some point. So he's got to be ready. I think Justin's future is very, very bright. I think it's a great marriage for him and Arthur Smith to be together in that run play action scheme. So I think that's a very great landing spot for Justin, and I'm thrilled for him. I was hoping everything was going to work out well for him in Chicago, obviously. But you know, he has a chance to close that book and start writing a new chapter, and I'm thrilled for him.
Coach, you developed a lot of young quarterbacks over years in the NFL and now the UFL. If you can put into perspective for the casual fan who wants to hike their leg on a rookie quarterback, you know, halfway through their rookie campaign. I mean, people forget that Peyton Manning threw 28 INTs. You know, Steve Young was cast off by the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. It ain't easy being a rookie quarterback. Can you put into perspective for everybody listening right now what it's like for a star, quote, generational type talent to go from college to the NFL and developing that quarterback?
It's very, very difficult. It's very difficult, obviously. And, you know, to put it in perspective, if you're the first pick in the draft in baseball and you go to Tennessee or Vanderbilt, or you're a senior at Vanderbilt and you're the starting shortstop and you get picked first, you're not going to the show right away. You're going to rookie ball.
Yeah.
For probably a couple of years. And so, you know, the coaches and the player himself are expected to be ready to go week one, you know, in the National Football League and in front of the world to see. And it's, I think we hold unrealistic expectations on these young men sometimes. And we're real easy to call young men generational talents and use these terms on guys where I think those terms are used a little too loosely. And so to me, the part that the young man has to get into is the situation he gets into. It has just as much to play on anything, whether they're success or failure for a young guy. Is the head coach a quarterback friendly guy? Does he know how to develop a quarterback? Does he know how to do a practice schedule to make sure you don't have to blitz the quarterback every single play during training camp? What's the offensive coordinator? Is he a quarterback guy? Is he an O-line guy? The quarterback coach, what's his experience? It's some, you know, I can equate it to Philadelphia, you know, with Doug Peterson and Frank Reich and myself. You know, Doug and Frank had a unique perspective on it. They had coached for a while, but they had also played. And I think if you looked at years of coaching, you know, I was probably, for my age, had more years of coaching. But it all came together because all three of us were quarterback-centric people. And so whether that had anything to do with Carson Wentz's success in his first and second year with all three of us there, I don't know. I don't think it hurt him. You know, I don't think it hurt him, and a lot of it was on Carson, his hard work. So I think the situation that a lot of these young men get into is just as – and here's the last thing, I'll leave it at that. Look at a lot of these young guys that are making it, okay, over the test of time. I mean, there's very little change in their first 5 years as a starter. There's, even if their head coach leaves – or excuse me, even if their offensive coordinator leaves for a head coaching job, they got somebody that's going to keep the system there. I mean, look at Tom Brady. How many years was he in that New England system? Now, Tom obviously is better to do it, but it was the New England Patriots offense. He never really had to learn a new system. And I think that helps. And so I'm hoping, you know, for a lot of these young guys that are some really good young quarterbacks in the game right now, I'm hoping that their situation stays stable.
Coach John DiDilippo joining us here on Amber and Ian. So, Coach, we keep referencing your NFL career, obviously a long time coordinator, a long time quarterbacks coach. You just about everything on the offensive side of the ball in the NFL. Why were you attracted to making the hop over to the UFL last year?
You know, I was at a point in my career, Amber, I wanted to take a chance on something, and, you know, I wanted to get out of my comfort zone a little bit. And that's okay. You know, I was 44 or 45 at the time when I took this job and, you know, had a chance to sit down and talk with you know, the USFL people, you know, Moose Johnston, you know, Mr. Shanks at Fox, you know, Bill Polian, you know, guys like that were a part of that search committee. And they were, you know, hell-bent on making this thing happen. And I really wanted to try my seat in the head coaching chair and see what that was like. And I was very fortunate to, you know, we had a good season last year. We had really good players at the New Orleans Breakers and the USFL. And I was very fortunate when the merger happened. Unfortunately, my team didn't make the merger, but I was asked to coach the Memphis Showboats and thrilled to be here.
Well, you go from, like, you know, eating at, I don't know, Giacomo's, right, and Mother's, and, you know, I mean, we can go on down the list of New Orleans. Now you got Rendezvous Barbecue and everything else in Memphis, and you get Houston Roughnecks week one coming up Sunday on ESPN, 3 o'clock Eastern. Man, just if you can, describe your squad and what you're expecting to see week one coming up against Houston, because we can't wait.
I'm thrilled about our team. You know, we're all about passion, energy, and swagger. That's what this organization is built upon. This organization is built upon practicing fast. We play the way we practice. I'm not a big believer in certain guys are gamers and this and that. You play the way you practice and the way you prepare. So, you know, and at the end of the day, if you prepare like that and you have some passion, energy, and swagger to you, if you lose the game, then so be it. The other team was better than you that day, and let's move on and win the next one. So, that's what our team is built upon. I think you'll see us flying around on all sides of the football, on all three phases on Sunday. And it's a huge, huge game for us because this is a divisional opponent for us and on the road. So this is a big game to open the season for our football team. But at the same time, there's going to be no pressure added on anybody. It's the most important game of our season because it's the next game.
Coach, give them hell. And by the way, just out of curiosity, in all the Rocky movies, the referee – his name was Joe DiFilippo. Any relation? I mean, what do we got here?
I'll tell you what. You learn something new every day. I had no idea that was his name, and I'm a Rocky guy.
Go back and watch, man. Rocky 1, 2, and 3 is Joe DiFilippo is the referee on all the Rocky fights.
That is great. Oh, man, that's going to be some trivia.
I know what you're doing right now when you hang out with Amber and I. You're going to Google. There we go, right there. Hey, he refereed a hell of a fight, by the way. You coach a great game, he refereed a hell of a fight. So there you have it. Come away healthy. Good luck against Houston on Sunday here on ESPN. Thank you, boss.
Thanks, Coach.
Thanks so much for having me on.
I'm telling you, that's a fact. Go back and watch the Rocky movies, Amber. And your referee tonight, Joe DiFilippo. Guaranteed.
I believe you. I've been trying to Google it. I'm not finding that information. I'm finding, like, Joe DiFilippo's obituary and stuff.
Oh,
it's like a
Lord.
Realtor in another city. Yeah, I'm not finding the character from the Rocky movies, but I do believe you. Doesn't sound like something you would make up. So there you go. Coming up next here on Amber. Although I don't know. I mean, you do make some crazy stuff up. No, Mike Wilbon. Speaking of making stuff up, Mike Wilbon, he's never sounded more mature. Let's put it nicely. He's never sounded more mature than he did with his recent betting take. We'll get into that here on ESPN Radio.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac, weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And, boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season.
Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
So there have been some big betting scandals over the last few days that have rocked the world of sports. Amber and Ian is presented by Progressive Insurance. Your small business keeps you on the go. Progressive Commercial Insurance keeps your policy within reach with our easy-to-use mobile app. Learn more at progressivecommercial.com. Find him at Ian Fitz ESPN. You can find me as well at Amber W Sports. But Ian, the thing with Shohei Ohtani, you and I have talked about that at length. And of course, we got the statement from Shohei and he denied everything through his new interpreter. But then you also had the scandal of Jontay Porter. And I believe you and Zaslow talked about it last night when you guys were in for me. And this scandal, I think, is even, it looks even worse in a way from the outside looking in. Now, Jontay Porter, obviously not of the same stature in terms of his sport. as Shohei Ohtani.
It's not a two-way contract for the Raptors, right? Making like $415,000.
But that's why. That's almost why it looks so much more obvious what happened. Because when the money starts coming in on the two-way player, making very little money in terms of that league anyways, it sets off some alarm with some sports books. So it's pretty easy to get caught when people are putting bets that exceed the typical limits for a two-way play and prop bets generally. When people start, you know, piling money on those things, pretty easy to raise the red flags.
Yeah, well, that's because wagering has been legalized in so many platforms. This, to me, this isn't getting caught. We talked to David Purdom about this last night, who is a wagering expert and ESPN senior reporter, knows all things Vegas. There is no way, if gambling, wagering, has not been legalized on the FanDuel DraftKings platform and in so many states across our great country.
And ESPN bet.
Absolutely. But staying with it, this particular one, yeah. DraftKings is the one that flagged this thing,
yeah.
Right? Where you have a guy averaging 4 points and four boards.
Right.
On a two-way contract. That was the most wagered on prop yeah. bet going in the NBA on these two particular nights where the under hit in both of these wagers, where he all of a sudden opted out after playing 3 minutes. Because on a prop bet for a player, if you don't know, if you get a wager on a prop bet, the player actually the person has to play in the game. So he played for 3 minutes in one of these on like January 26th and said, oh, my God, the eye injury I had like a week ago, it's acting up. I'm out. And then you fast forward, you know, to a game about a week and a half ago where he plays 3 or 4 minutes and the under hits in his total combined points and rebounds. And he plays, again, 3 minutes and gets the bubble guts. Oh, my God. Got the flu. Got to go to the toilet. I'm out, coach. And he's done, and both unders hit for astronomical amounts of money on DraftKings. If gambling was not legalized, this is not being noticed, in my opinion. Because
right. Your illegal bookie is not reporting it to
no,
the NBA. But DraftKings sure as hell is. Because DraftKings... And
yes.
the NBA and all of the leagues, all these legal books and all of the leagues, they have the same goal. And if things are fixed, then everyone's losing money. The leagues are losing money because nobody
Vegas
trusts the product and that
money.
Costs you eyeballs. Vegas is losing money and the books are losing money because obviously they're paying out on bets when people essentially had insider information. Now, there's two explanations for this. It doesn't look great for Jontay Porter, and a lot of people on the internet are jumping to that conclusion. And of course, we don't know if he's the one involved with these bets. That's all allegations. The internet is looking at you the same way, or is looking at this the same way that you're looking at me right now, through the Zoom screen.
Right.
Allegedly. We don't know, though. The other thing, the other possibility that I haven't heard floated, right, is if it's not him himself... Certainly somebody in his life, say like the eye issue actually was lingering and, you know, his girlfriend, wife, mom, best friend, whatever, knew about it.
Well,
it's like, well, this under is probably going to hit. Or you knew that you knew that he had the flu. You knew he was going into that game with the flu and you had that kind of like inside. That's the other possibility here. But it kind of looks, from the outside looking in, it looks like he's throwing his own stats. That's what it looks like. Again, allegedly.
Amber, we had a lot of people phoning in last night when you were out, obviously sick, and you're battling a hurt tonight, and God bless you, you're a warrior. But Zaz and I had a lot of people going, you know, this is all because, you know, gambling has become legalized, you know, for the most part in America. And it's the opposite. But Michael Wilbon, of all people on PTI today, said that very same thing. Here's Wilbon.
We're going to have one of these stories every week. Because this is what the leagues and the networks, including this one, have wrought. They have gotten into bed with gambling interests. They have partnered. They have decided to make hundreds of millions of dollars, and it'll, I'm sure, total billions in the future, with gamblers, with sports gambling. They decided this, Tony. And so I am not upset at any of these guys. I understand that all the players in these sessions before
a
season starts.
This player essentially threw the game, you're not upset?
Tony, I'm more upset with the people above him who encourage it. They don't just encourage it. They don't just tolerate it. They say, what did Rudy Gobert do? What did he do?
Let's deal with
the reality of this.
Money.
The people in charge of these leagues and networks have said,
Mike,
bring it to us.
I mean, throw the game. He's Jonte Porter. He took himself out after 3 minutes. I don't think he was throwing games
but he might have been
throwing his own stats.
Since you're yelling at everybody, I'm going to talk calmly to you. And that is because wagering has been legalized, that is the reason that this was discovered. This has been going on forever in Premier League soccer. You know, in soccer in South America, heck, go to Hot Rod Williams
NBA,
at
I'm
Tulane.
Sure.
Go to Hot Rod Williams at Tulane, right? The Arizona State scandal in the 80s. I mean,
this is what we know about.
This is not new, but with prop bets and player prop bets, that is the new angle here. That is a new generation of wagering. And because it has been legalized, that's the reason it was caught, because it was such a low-level player that had this astronomical amount of money wagered on his under in rebounding and assists and points, that it was caught. If it wasn't legalized in so many places, it would not have been caught. So,
Which I cannot imagine that the people involved in this did not realize that they were going to get caught. But the more that this happens, and sure, there will be more, but the more that this happens, because now there's actual transparency because of legalization, then players are going to realize, hey, there's actual checks and balances here, which you are 100% right. There did not used to be when everything was on the low and it was all dirty. Plenty more on ESPN Radio.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Wednesday night on ABC, Brittany Griner, for the first time since being released from a Russian prison, shares her story.
You've been told to go through your bag, and you felt...
Felt the cartridge.
What were you thinking at that moment when you felt that?
My life is over right here.
Her sentence.
Just been told you're going to be 9 years in one of the worst prisons in Russia.
I was just so scared for everything, because there's just so much unknown.
Brittany Griner, Robin Roberts, Prisoner in Russia. Wednesday night at 10, 9 central on ABC.
So we got a general manager's mock draft, and of course it's mock draft season, Ian, but a GM's mock draft is a different approach than all of our draft experts' mock drafts. Amber and Ian presented by Progressive Insurance. Let me explain. Mike Tannenbaum, he is one of our NFL front office insiders, of course. He was in the league for a very long time, working within front offices, working as a general manager of multiple teams. And as a GM, he, of course, is accustomed to having to make huge decisions when it comes to drafting. So what he did, now that he's our analyst here at ESPN, is he put together his own mock. But whereas Mel Kiper and our other experts, the Field Yates of the world and whatnot, when they put together mocks, what they do is they rely on information that they're receiving from the teams. So they put together mocks based on information that leads them to believe that team A, B, and C are going a certain direction. Not what they would do. They were in control of the team, but what they think the team is going to do. They essentially do it more as a reporter or a journalist, so to speak. Mike Tannenbaum's approach is, no. I'm going to do this as a GM. And my mock is going to be what I would do if I was in control of the draft board for every single team. So, Tannenbaum's mock, looks a little different than some others. Let's go through a little.
By the way, I've got Rachel's theme tonight done. That was School of Rock. I've got this done. I figured it out. It's over.
Oh, is that what you were pointing? You're pointing to your headphones behind the curtain. You're pointing to your headphones in the Zoom.
I'm so
happy right now. I think you can't hear.
That's literally what I thought.
It's over.
I thought he's having technical difficulties. No, he can't hear.
I'm so proud.
So, by the way, I am stalling.
No, I'm good.
I'm giving a whole analysis of the way mocks are put together. And all he's doing is telling me that he knows your damn theme.
That's it. I have Tuesday Tunes done. It's over. It's finished.
All right. Well, that's not Tuesday Tunes. Is on the rundown for an hour from now.
I know,
so
but I got it. I'm so proud
that
I already got it. School of Rock is over. It's over. So, Rachel, you're defeated. But anyway, go back to our regular schedule.
So we will be revealing whether Ian's cocky dance here.
It's over.
Whether it's warranted or not in about an hour from now.
I'm Deion Sanders high stepping from the 30 on a kickoff return right now.
That is what you are doing right now. So you better be right.
I got it. It's done.
All right, back to what I was trying to do.
Go.
And now that I know you can hear me,
yes,
I can speed this thing up a little bit.
So look, here's the
with
thing.
Should I tell you what the first four picks are? Or you
wanna... I got it. No, yeah, I watched it this morning. I have it in front of me. Yeah.
Yeah, but our listener doesn't know. We've got Caleb Williams going one, Drake May going to the Commanders at two, Jaden Daniels going three to the Patriots, J.J. McCarthy, the quarterback from Michigan, going four to the Arizona Cardinals, who also have Kyler Murray.
That's the one where everyone like just lost their bleep, right, and went crazy. And when you hear from a GM's perspective, like Monty Austinfort, right, the GM of the Arizona Cardinals, if you don't believe because Kyler Murray was not your pick, you know, and your head coach there was not the head coach that selected Kyler Murray, and Kyler Murray's work ethic has been – widely discussed to the point where in his contract that they gave him all that money, which by the way, a lot of that money's been paid, you know, so now you're only on the hook for two more years of that contract. It's not as undigestible for another team as it used to be, but it was widely known that Kyler Murray wasn't watching film at home. He was on the sticks and he was late to lifts and late to practice. And the last thing you want in your quarterback, right? The guy wearing a C on his uni is a dude being late to things. Well, that's Kyler Murray and it has been. Now, has he changed a bit? Maybe. But as far as Mike T is concerned, you're going in and bringing in a 21-year-old, 22-year-old quarterback in J.J. McCarthy. He's 27-1 and won a national championship. Now, did he have to throw a lot of passes in big games? He wasn't asked to. I think he threw 9 passes in their win against Penn State. 9. But in their win over Purdue, I think he threw like 41. When he's asked to perform at a very high level, he did deliver. When you're the head coach or the offensive coordinator in college, your job is not to showcase players for the NFL. Your job is to win games in college. And they did. I mean, I swear to you, I think he went 8 of 9 against Penn State and did not throw a pass in the second half. Why? Because they ran it for damn near 400 yards. Why would you throw the ball if you're Sharon Moore filling in for Jim Harbaugh, right?
Well, you sure as heck wouldn't if you don't fully trust your quarterback, though. I mean, that's the counter argument to that point.
Well,
the coach is trying to win games. The quarterback is trying to win games, right? The quarterback's out there trying to do his job, but they took it out of his hands.
The other counter is you're averaging 6 yards a carry. Why the hell would you throw the ball when they can't stop you, when you're gutting them? Where Blake Corum goes for over 200 and, you know, Donovan Edwards is going for like a $140. That happened. That was real. So if you did try to start to throw the ball, right, and it didn't work because for whatever reason, then you're getting off, you're getting killed. I mean, why would you not run the ball when they can't stop it every single down? I mean,
I'm not suggesting that you should have, but I do think two things can be true. You could have had a hell of a running game, and I don't think that there's any arguing otherwise there when it comes to Michigan, and you might not have had a hell of a quarterback or an elite quarterback at the helm. He's a winner. That's undeniable because that team, of course, is winners. And so I'm not trying to take anything away from what he did in college. But when you're talking about the NFL draft, all you can do is evaluate somebody individually and not as a team effort there when it comes to the numbers he put up, when it comes to those sorts of things, like those deficiencies in his own game where it's like, hey, you were the one. You weren't the one with the game on your shoulders. You weren't the one with the team on your back. And that's a bit unusual for that position. So you're taking somewhat of a flyer on him.
So you're saying that a guy who completed 72% of his passes is deficient?
It's not that I think he's deficient, like he's not good. But if we're talking about him being a top four pick and you moving on from a guy who right now for the next few years, because yes, although he's making the bulk of that contract this upcoming year at $37 million, he has roughly $45 to $55 million cap hit for the next 4 years after that. That's not what he's getting paid in salary, but that's his cap hit. If you are trying to move on from that, which is Kyler's contract at this point, then you better be darn sure that the next guy, because he's going to be cheaper. The next guy is going to be cheaper. And I think that's why Tannenbaum pushes this concept. That's fine. But is the next guy going to be better? He has to be both. He can't just be cheaper. And if we're talking Caleb Williams, I understand the argument. Is J.J. McCarthy that much better than Kyler Murray? I don't know the answer to that question.
And at the NFL level, I don't either. But I do know that what you just said about just going to that particular Penn State game, if they had thrown a pass in the second half and I watched every snap of that game, I would have come off my I would have left the game I was broadcasting, got on a plane, and punched Sherrone Moore right in the mouth because there was zero reason to throw a pass. Because they were gashing Penn State every single snap. There was zero reason to throw a pass in that game. None. Nada. Zilch. And
that's fine, but then we're left with is questions about J.J. McCarthy for the second half of that game.
That's one game. The body of work, if you really watch J.J. McCarthy, he completed 72% of his passes for nearly 3,000 yards. He averaged nearly a first down every time he threw the ball. I mean, what more do you want in a quarterback? And he's 27-1. 27-1. So what Tannenbaum is saying here, and I don't necessarily agree with it. I'm just saying, I'm just giving you his logic, is that, you know, McCarthy is, he's got the size. He's around 6'2.5", 6'3", about 205. I mean, he looks the part in person. I saw him four times in person, having the privilege of being on the call for four of his games. Man, the dude just carries himself like a winner. So my point of this conversation is, I understand where Mike T is coming from, but he also, in saying you draft J.J. McCarthy with the Arizona Cardinals, he also has a proposed trade in this, and that's what we haven't gotten to yet. He is saying that you're shopping Kyler Murray, and the one team he would target is the Minnesota Vikings. Now, that's the part, Amber, that I do not agree with. Because if I'm Minnesota, I think I've got my guy. And this is the part that sounds crazy. But Kevin O'Connell saw a guy go to quarterback rehab in San Francisco in Sam Darnold. And Sam Darnold's got tools. But he's just been asked, like, when he was a rookie with the Jets, you're being asked to run the Peyton Manning offense. There's one guy who can run that. That's Peyton Manning. That's it. I mean, so then he's cast off from there, goes to Carolina. That was a bleep show. Then he goes to rehab with Kyle Shanahan and the San Francisco 49ers. And now the Minnesota Vikings just brought him in when they lost Kirk Cousins. To me, Sam Darnold with Kevin O'Connell has got a remarkable chance to do what Baker Mayfield just did in Tampa, and that is bring his career back to where it should have started. And that is as a starting quarterback in the NFL. When it comes to J.J. McCarthy, I'm with Mike T. When this dude was asked to make plays, go watch the Alabama game in the college football playoff. This dude made plays to help him win that game.
Remember Kyler Murray in college? I mean, I'm pulling up his stats.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
It's so insane. It's over in 18, over 4,300 yards. You're parading with J.J. McCarthy's 79% completion percentage. In 2017, Kyler Murray put up over an 85%
But you know what I also
completion
percentage. Saw Kyler Murray.
That dude was out of control. Across the board, Kyler Murray's stats in college blow J.J. McCarthy's out of the water.
Well,
blow them out of the water.
Absolutely, because he threw it every down. Absolutely they did. But here's the thing.
And he threw very well and very accurately.
I also saw Kyler Murray play at a remarkably high rate before he got paid in the NFL. He helped the Arizona Cardinals get to a playoff game. And then when he got paid, he got lazy.
I don't know. I think that narrative feels old to me.
The punter, Andy Lee, was doing more film work at home than Kyler Murray was.
I think we're past that story, though. I know you have inside information on him, so you're always
going to have a thing
with Kyler.
Whoa. Hold on. That was public knowledge. There is no inside intel at all.
Oh, yeah. No, that's public knowledge, but I feel like you have always heard in the NFL circles that he's not the hardest worker by any means. And, of course, it became
public knowledge
when all the rest of us saw it in his contract. But I think you've heard from people across the NFL that certainly was the case for a while there. I just think that when you're talking about what you've seen from Kyler and what you've seen from JJ. And again, you have Kyler in hand and you have the fourth overall pick. Like, why not spend that real estate elsewhere trying to help your quarterback and address some of those other needs? And then you can also address the quarterback position, but you don't need to address it at four. Like, you could always draft another quarterback that's not JJ McCarthy.
That's Mike T's point, is that you are getting draft value because you're trading also. You're getting that
you're
pick.
You're trading Kyler, but I'm saying you could take a quarterback in the second or third round, right? Like, you know, you're taking a flat. Either way, it's a crapshoot.
This is not my argument. This is not Amber's argument. This is Mike Tannenbaum's argument, and I'm defending Mike Tannenbaum's point of, and it's not far-fetched to think that Arizona will take a quarterback at four, even having Kyler Murray.
And if I was Arizona and if I was interested in taking a quarterback, I would at the very least, if I wanted J.J. McCarthy, be trading back a few spots because I would imagine that he'd still be there. Frankly, four seems very high for him. Coming up next here on ESPN Radio, back to Kim Mulkey and the women's bracket. There was still a lot left on that Kim Mulkey story. We were up against it when we discussed it earlier in the show, so we will get back to what's happening with her with the Washington Post here on ESPN Radio. March is madness, of course, like it is each and every year, but it's more madness than ever when it comes to the women's bracket. And I don't mean the bracket busters because we never get a ton of that in the women's game. In the women's game, it tends to be a bit more predictable because the higher seeds tend to be a bit more dominant, frankly, than in the men's game. So things kind of go a little bit more according to plan. But in terms of the ratings, in terms of the attention, in terms of the play that we're seeing on the basketball court, I mean, the likes of the talent of people like Caitlin Clark. And when the eyeballs are to the tune of 5 million people for a single game, which is what Iowa got in their game against West Virginia, almost 5 million people tuned in for that game, which is, of course, a record there in the NCAA tournament outside of the Final Four for a women's game. When it's that many people watching, then you're going to have an elevation of all your stars in the league, right? All your stars across the sport, and also all your coaches. And Kim Mulkey is one of the most visible coaches in all of women's basketball, not just because of her outfits, but also because LSU is pretty darn good and has some superstars on that team as well. She's a very outspoken coach. She's been a controversial coach in the past. Well, she was a-speaking after the game on Saturday, and where she took it, I'm not sure any of us were expecting. She went on a 4-minute rant about an article that's apparently going to come out about her in the Washington Post that Ian and I would have been wholly unaware of had Kim Mulkey not brought our attention to it. Take a listen to the LSU head coach.
But you see, reporters who give a megaphone to a one-sided, embellished version of things aren't trying to tell the truth. They're trying to sell newspapers and feed the click machine. This is exactly why people don't trust journalists and the media anymore. It's these kinds of sleazy tactics and hatchet jobs that people are just tired of. I'm fed up. And I'm not going to let the Washington Post attack this university, this awesome team of young women I have, or me without a fight. I've hired the best defamation law firm in the country. And I will sue the Washington Post if they publish a false story about me. Not many people are in a position to hold these kind of journalists accountable, but I am, and I'll do it. That's all I'm going to say about this right now. And now I'm going to get back to talking about my basketball team and winning this game tomorrow.
I mean, that's all she's going to say about it, Ian. I feel like she said everything.
I had no idea what she was talking about until she just drew attention to it, and now I can't wait to read the article in the Washington Post. As you mentioned in the first hour of the program, if you're the Washington Post, and I hate paywalls. I don't pay them. I miss newspapers. I used to love my morning coffee with the newspaper, but they're long gone in this day and age, especially most of them behind paywalls. But to your point, if you're the Washington Post, I will pay my $3.99 or whatever the hell it is, or $2.99 to go read whatever the hell they are writing about Kim Mulkey, because she went on a remarkable defense where we didn't know anything existed. And so now, what are you defensive about?
Right.
I mean, I want to know.
Yeah, me too.
And on Carl Bernstein's birthday, right? On Carl mm-hmm. Bernstein's birthday today, we are talking about Kim Mulkey, the LSU, and the Washington Post. And if you don't know who Carl Bernstein is, you might want to take a history class every now and then, right? So there you go.
She framed it as a hit piece against her. And we're all thinking, man, what is this?
What is
that's coming? So if you're the Washington Post, I mean, everybody who works in the media, frankly, all of
them. Yeah, this ain't the New York Post. This is the Washington Post, right?
It's Washington Post.
They're making sure they don't get sued.
No, it's the newspaper that broke Watergate. I mean, it's the Washington Post.
That's what I'm talking about, Carl Bernstein.
Right, but if you are the Washington Post, like all of us who work in the media, obviously it gets really old, the whole, like, you know, the fake news, everything's fake news, everybody, we hate the media, we blame the media for everything. If the media uncovers anything negative about it, it's our fault, it's not your fault, right? So that whole tired act, and that's exactly what Kim Mulkey's doing here. But if you're the Washington Post, you simultaneously, so the attack on journalism, not so great, but you simultaneously love the attention. Because like you said, we're all waiting for this article now. And we're all going to pay for this article. And we're all going to read this article. And then we're all going to be talking about this article here on ESPN and everywhere else. And it's going to get the eyes on that newspaper, which of course is how the newspaper makes money. Now, I don't know what's coming, but if she's already fake newsing us and we don't even have the news, I would imagine it's not good for Kim Mulkey. It doesn't sound good anyway so far.
And she also mentioned, if I'm not mistaken, that this has been like a year and a half or two years in the making.
Which is funny, because then she also said that she didn't have enough, that the reporter was dirty because the reporter didn't give her enough time to respond. 2 years to respond. 2 years! This reporter's been trying to get her for an interview. But then she said, oh, well, just in the last 48 hours, they sent over questions, and I'm busy, obviously, in this tournament. It's like, okay, but what about the 2 years before that?
All she did was draw so much attention to something that we all had no idea existed. And if it were printed, one-tenth of the people, after it's printed, would have read it compared to after she drew attention to it.
Depending what it said, though. If it's bad enough, we would have all known about it anyways. And so maybe that's why she's already on the defensive. Coming up next year on Amber and Ian, the NFL made a significant rule change here on ESPN Radio.
Wednesday night on ABC, Brittany Griner, for the first time since being released from a Russian prison, shares her story.
You've been told to go through your bag, and you felt...
Felt the cartridge.
What were you thinking that moment when you felt that?
My life is over right here.
Her sentence.
Just been told you're going to be 9 years in one of the worst prisons in Russia.
I was just so scared for everything, because there's just so much unknown.
Brittany Griner, Robin Roberts, Prisoner in Russia. Wednesday night at 10, 9 central on ABC.